We are seeing an increased use of social media. Is that a fair statement? And as the generations go, because if you can put up that graph for me, so there's lots of, if you go on the internet, there's all different sorts of data about social media use and different surveys, but so they might give different results, but I think what's clear is the trend that we see, that the younger the people, the more time gets spent on social media. Maybe it's just because us oldies don't know how to use the new stuff. And I think as we get older, it gets more, and the technology keeps going, it gets more difficult to keep up. But it is, this trend that we're seeing is a problem where we're seeing the younger generations are just spending more and more time. This one shows that young people spend about 3 hours a day. The one study I heard is that young people can spend up to 6.5 hours a day on social media. Work is something that they fit in between social media and lunch. And they also say age 19 to 29 have the highest rates of loneliness than the older adults because people are stuck in social media, stuck with fake friendships, fake relationships, and not having this interaction that we should have and that God designed us for. When we go to a new location, maybe a new holiday spot or something, is the first thing we look for is the Wi-Fi password, you know? Make sure that we can stay connected with our friends. But what about the person sitting right next to you as opposed to the Wi-Fi password? And people are more interested in what's new than what's true. So I want to speak today about friendship and partnership because I think it's so important. And just in light of what we've been speaking about the last few weeks, getting out there, ministering, and Declan talking about that as well, is preparing yourself in the quiet place before you go out to minister. But everything we do through partnership with each other and friendship with each other. We must never be a lone ranger in ministry of any kind, even if it's just giving a testimony. The team that was up here this morning was a lovely picture of going out as a team. Willem was never going to go out on his own and try and help, but we always do things in team. We do it in partnership with each other. So I want to start with partnership and just look at some of the examples in the Bible. I think we learn from wonderful partnerships in the Bible and some less wonderful partnerships as well. But if we can start with Exodus 4, some of these you would know. I mean, who did Moses partner with? Aaron, his brother, that's right. So then the Lord's anger burned against Moses. This was sort of a rough way to start, but Moses had been giving excuses and saying, but Lord, you can't send me. I've got a speech impediment. I'm not good up front. And he says, what about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He's already on his way to meet you, and his heart will be glad when he sees you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth, and I will help both of you to speak and will teach you what to do. So God was impressing the message on Moses, and Moses had to relay this to Aaron, and Aaron would then speak to Pharaoh. But we know what happens. You know, when your spouse says, tell the our visitors here, this particular story, and you get two sentences in, and what happens? They jump in and they start taking over the story. So that's what Moses did as well, is Moses got Aaron to speak, but Moses was jumping in as well. So I think in a way, Aaron was really complimenting Moses. So the two of them form quite a lekker partnership together there. And I mean, is your spouse exactly the same as you, or is your spouse different to you? Different. So you complement each other. So one of you might be admin intensive, the one might be more practical. And so I see some smiles and elbow nudges. And so we complement each other, and Moses and Aaron complement each other in their partnership there as well. If we turn to 1 Samuel 18, David and Jonathan. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return to his father's house. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. So, and Jonathan took the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. You can leave the last scripture on. Thanks. So Jonathan was Saul's son, so Saul was king. Jonathan naturally should have become king, and then David became king. But Jonathan was good friends with David. And I think all of us, when we read this passage, we imagine they're like two 25-year-olds hanging out together. But Jonathan was probably 20 to 30 years older than David, and we don't realize that when you actually read this. But if you go through the logic of that book, and of the book of Samuel, and you see how he had already been serving in the armies, you realize he would have been of a higher age than David. So he was older than him, but they had this incredible friendship. So it wasn't just a partnership, it was also an amazing friendship that they'd built. And that last scripture there where he says, he took his tunic and his sword and his bow and his belt, and he gave all that to David. And it was almost like a sign of, this is what I've got as the king's son, and I should be king, but I acknowledge the anointing on you and I'm passing it on to you. And there was this amazing friendship between those two guys. And as I said, I want to focus on friendship and partnership. Then we turn to Acts in the New Testament, Acts 15 from verse 36. After some, so Paul and Barnabas were ministering together, and Paul said to Barnabas, let us return and visit the brothers in every city where we proclaim the word of the Lord and see how they are. Now Barnabas wanted to take with them John, called Mark, but Paul thought best not to take with them the one who had withdrawn from them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. And there arose a sharp disagreement, so that they separated from each other. Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and departed, having been commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. And he went through Syria and Sicilia, strengthening the churches. So there's two learnings there. The one is, we don't always end up agreeing with each other. Now, there's a nice saying, the calling is divine, but the relationships are human. So Paul and Barnabas had been serving well together, and they agreed on what the right purpose was. They knew where they had to go and what they had to accomplish, but they started debating about the composition of the team. You know, who should we take with? Who can we rely on? They ended up splitting ways, but what's the other learning? They each chose somebody to go with them. So none of them went off as a lone ranger and said, well, this isn't working. And how often do we see that in our times? You know, people get disillusioned by people in the church, and then they go and they shoot off and they become a one-man band. And or they're just two people meeting in a house. And we need to be in partnership. We need to be in community like this. It's so important. So there, at least when they did disagree and they agreed to disagree, they each chose somebody to go with them, and they went off in team or in partnership. We also see in Colossians 4 verse 10 that Mark was actually the cousin of Barnabas. My fellow prisoner Aristarchus sends you his greetings, as does Mark, the cousin of Barnabas. So like we do, we minister also in family, and there as well, certain of them were ministering in family together. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 verse 9. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. So this was quite practical for them in the day, because they didn't have the nice roads that we had. They had rough pathways that they would go on. And if you were two people walking together, you could literally catch the other person if they fell. So it was a physical support, let's say. But it's a lovely picture of just spiritual support, of course. You know, we want to always be walking with each other, walking in accountability, supporting each other, mentoring each other, so that we can help. Just when I fall, Willem can catch me. If he falls, Stefan can catch him, and I can catch, you know, we all support each other like this, because we all go through little dips, or we go through difficult times, or we have different gifting sets as well. So if I have a certain problem in an area, I know I can, if I've got a practical problem, I can call on Stefan. If he's got an admin issue, he might call on me, you know, because we know each other's strengths. And then it goes on, a well-known part at the bottom there, though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. And that's always a lovely picture to use at a wedding. You know, the two strands coming together with God, it's very difficult to break a cord that is made out of three strands. So always working in team, but always having God in the relationship as well. Then aside from partnership, because partnership is like, let's say, almost like peers, but then you get mentoring. So we mustn't miss out on opportunity to mentor people. We've got to grow the guys sort of that are around us, but we've got to be looking to the weaker guys or the next generation, the younger guys bringing up. And younger doesn't always mean youth. It could mean younger in the faith, but you know what I mean? So bringing through guys younger in the faith, bringing through the actual younger generation, because they are the future of the church. So there's a few nice examples in the Bible as well of where guys were mentored. In 1 Kings 19, we've got Elijah and Elisha. So he departed from there. This is Elijah. Elijah departed from there and found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen in front of him, and he was the 12th. Elijah passed by him and cast his cloak upon him. Where did we hear that earlier? With Jonathan passing on to David. So the same thing, Elijah casts his cloak onto him. It's a sign of, you know, this prophetic gift that God's given me. He's actually going to pass that on to you. Elijah passed by him and cast his cloak upon him, and he left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, "Let me kiss my father and mother, and then I will follow you." And he said, "Go back again for what I've done to you." And he returned from following him and took the yoke of oxen and sacrificed them and boiled their flesh with the yokes of the oxen and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he arose and went after Elijah and assisted him. So that picture of Elijah casting his cloak, Elisha going and sort of closing off whatever was he had to sort out, and then coming alongside Elijah and assisting him. He was like his 2IC and his mentee, learning from him as Elijah went along. And I mean, if you go in the, I'm not going to go there now, but if you look in the books of 1 and 2 Timothy, Paul talks a lot about how he mentored Timothy. And we've got some wonderful teachings across 4:12 where we talk about training Timothys. So it's kind of a term that we use for younger men in the faith. And we need to be looking, as I said, to the next generation. Are we training up the Timothys amongst us? And we're so fortunate in our church. I think there's a lot of churches out there where this just doesn't have this mentoring or accountability. It's a lot of going through the motions. It's not facing the brutal facts with each other. I was having a lunch with three suppliers and the guy out of, there's two ladies and a guy, and I know he's strong in his faith. He said he goes to Sea Point Promenade with a flip chart, and he stands and he calls, and he like, and I think maybe a mic, I don't know, and he stops the runners and he writes questions on the flip chart. So I thought, wow, this is amazing. I don't know if I'd have that guts. And one of the ladies started asking me now, like, what if you start giving time to the church, what does that mean? What will you do on a church day? And I started explaining accountability. And like, now I'll meet with a guy and I'll like ask him how his marriage is going, and their eyes are getting bigger and bigger. So I like look to him for support, and he's also looking at me like this. You know, so even people in what we see as healthy churches or guys that are sold out for God, not all churches are in this sort of accountability that we're in. And we take it for granted, I think. We don't realize what we've got. So we've got to nurture that. We've got to grow it. And, you know, if you're in a community, don't wait for your comm leader to say, hey, we need to watch rugby sometime or go for a hike or have a coffee. Engage with your comm leader. Accountability comes from us. The same. I must now go and speak to Richard or Kim or whoever, and I've got Andre Smith still at Somerset West. It's up to me to go and seek accountability, not to wait for somebody to say, hey, we haven't met for a while. You know, so I just want to put that out there as well, is really look for it. Because if Willem comes and says, hey, it's about time we met, then my heart's not ready for that. My heart must be in a posture like, hey, I want to meet with you because I want you to tell me how I'm doing. How do you think I'm doing in my marriage, in my parenting, in the workplace? Am I still giving enough in the workplace? Whatever it might be. So let's use this opportunity that we've got, this open culture of accountability that we've got. And then we've got Jethro in Exodus 18. Jethro is Moses' father-in-law. Moses' father-in-law said to him, what you're doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out. So this is an interesting one, because now Moses, he's been called by God to lead these people out of Israel, out of Egypt, and it's probably like 2 million people. And now, so he's kind of like bigger in the ministry now than Jethro is. But Jethro is still able to advise him. So we must look for opportunities as well. Don't just think you can only get advice from your comm leaders or your elders. We can, you know, get advice from the older guys as well that have been around for a long time. And also don't forget to encourage other. There's nothing stopping us from encouraging Mornay at Sunningdale or Willem, or you know, all of us need encouragement. So don't think everything just flows down. It's, you know, we're all accountable to each other and we must all encourage each other. And what Jethro basically says to him is that you can't do everything on your own. You are not able to do it alone. Now obey my voice. I will give you advice and God will be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God. And you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws and make them know the way in which they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And let them judge the people at all times. And he goes on to explain that you can't shepherd 2 million people. You need to put guys in place to help you with this. And it's the same. Over the years, there's been community groups in the different congregations of 40-plus people. You can't have one couple looking after 40 people without the people in the community also being part of that process and saying, right, who can I shepherd? Who can I mentor? Can I take these three young guys and bring them along with me and encourage them? So don't just participate. Don't just be present. Participate. All right? And be part of the process and help to encourage and bring the Timothys along. And watch out for the bad stuff. Unfortunately, bad also leads to bad if we look at 1 Kings 15. In the 18th year of the reign of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, Abijah became king of Judah, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 years. His mother's name was Maachah, daughter of Abishalom. He committed all the sins his father had done before him. So that we must be conscious of that as well. Watch out for the bad stuff we do, because we don't want to be passing that on. And don't our children love copying the bad stuff we do before the good stuff? So our insecurities, our addictions, our problems, whatever we do, the kids tend to pick that up. You know, parents love saying to the teachers, just, I don't know, we've got a few teachers here, I don't know where my child gets this bad language from. Have you heard that before, Shane? You know, but we know where it's coming from. There was one teacher, I love that example, the teacher, I've got to get this right now, but the teacher said to me, she said to the parents, I'll stop believing everything the child says about you when, wait, if you stop, if we'll, I'm getting it wrong. So you want to come say it for me? I just thought of that at the moment, but I'm messing it up. She said, oh yeah, if you stop believing everything your child says about me, then I'll stop believing everything the child says about you. Yeah, okay, that's it, okay. You guys knew where I was going. But these things come through our kids, and we must watch out, because it's more difficult to pass on the good stuff than the bad stuff. All right. And then we see examples in Scripture as well of where families minister together. And we love doing that within our church context as well. We love using couples and families and bringing our children in. And Priscilla and Aquila are an example of a couple in the Bible. If we go to Acts 18. A Jew named Apollos, an eloquent speaker who knew the Scriptures well, had just arrived in Ephesus. He'd been taught the way of the Lord and talked to others with great enthusiasm and accuracy about Jesus. However, he only knew about John's baptism. When Priscilla and Aquila heard him preaching boldly in the synagogue, they took him aside and explained the way of God more accurately. So it doesn't just say Priscilla or Aquila. So they did it as a team. So it was a couple ministering it as a team. And I mean, you see that a lot. I don't have to explain it. We do it with eldership couples, deacon couples, comm leader couples, as much as possible. People overseeing kids' church. It's not just the lady. We involve the gentleman as well. But that doesn't mean we don't have space for singles. There's a lot of ministry space for singles. But where couples are involved, we use them as a couple. And then in Romans 16:3-4, again a reference to Priscilla and Aquila. Greet, this is at the end of Romans where he sort of says his greetings, Paul. Greet Priscilla and Aquila, they have been co-workers in my ministry for Christ Jesus. In fact, they risked their lives for me. I'm not the only one who is thankful to them. So are all the Gentile churches. So they're again evidence that they had been ministering a lot as a couple. And then in 1 Corinthians 4:17, sometimes our family is not our blood family. So here's Paul and Timothy. That is the reason I'm sending Timothy to help you do this. He is my beloved and trustworthy child in the Lord. So sometimes our, you know, we talk about our blood family, but we are family as well. And if you can put up that circle diagram. And I just, God gave me this picture where, you know, we can be in partnership with people in this context, of Willem and I in partnership. We can be, hopefully we're friends as well in the church context. And then sometimes we're family. And the more you bring those together, if you bring it together in the middle, the stronger it gets, the more overlap there is. Like especially partnership and friendship. You don't want to be partnering with people in the church and not be friends with them. You know, we want to spend time with each other and get to know each other and actually be friends and not just be co-workers. And if you bring the family element, and that could be blood family, but it could just be because we eventually become like family because we become so close and we're crapping in each other's fridges and borrowing each other's cars or whatever it is. So we really are like family. And if you bring those three together, I think it just gets stronger and stronger than just trying to partnerships. And we're going to have other relationships. You're going to have friends maybe outside of church. You're going to have partners at work that are outside of the church context. You're going to have family outside of the church context. But when you bring those together, it really, in terms of going and ministering out together, it just adds that extra strength. So when you go out as a team to go and minister somewhere else, you know exactly what to expect from the team because you've got this tight-knit team together. Yeah, but I just think how Joy has supported me over the years as well. I mean, Joy supported me really well in the work context. As I also went through that sort of career phase when you, and Joy was having to look after babies and build our Edgemead house, and you know, so she supported me a lot in the work context, but she's also supported me in ministry. We supported each other, but she's really been a fantastic support. You guys have got to know her well, and it just, for me, it's just such a lovely picture of how we support each other as spouses. And you know, in the modern world we live, it's not always exactly the same where the husband is now the primary breadwinner, but so whatever your context is, make sure that you're supporting each other. If you co-providers or the wife is the provider, whatever the situation is, make sure that you guys are supporting each other in that you're not pulling against each other. If you can put up the horses for me. I've shown this picture already in Krabow, but I just love this picture of just how much those horses can pull. And it's because they train together. So one, I can't remember the stats. I did the stats last time. But one horse can pull X, but two horses can pull much more. They can pull like 3x, but if they train together, they can pull like 6x or 10x. I can't remember the numbers, but you can go and Google it if you want. But two horses that are trained together pull far more than just two horses or two times one horse. And that's the context that we want here. We want to partner together that we can accomplish so much more for God's kingdom when we all pull together. So imagine if 50 of us are pulling together, how that grows exponentially. So in conclusion, we need to invest in our relationships and we need to mentor the next generation. So investing in relationships means spending time with each other. So that's why we encourage what we call community living, not just doing the Sundays and the Wednesdays. And from January, from December actually when we're on leave, and definitely from January then as well, when we've got more time in the week, we definitely want to come over the mountain and see when we can spend more time with you guys in the week, whether it's an afternoon after work or an evening, or if you've got a lunch break that we can pop in and see you guys, because that's how we build partnerships and that's how we build friendships and relationships. And for you guys to do that amongst yourselves as well is, you guys are your neighbors with each other, and spend that time, invest that time in friendships and relationships. And that's what the rugby's about on Saturday as well. I'm sure not everybody is a big rugby supporter, but it's about getting together and just getting to know each other and sit and cheer together. And it should be a less stressful game if we're playing Italy, so we can just sit and relax and bri. Italy beat Australia, so it might be stressful, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. So two last scriptures, Proverbs 27:17. as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. So we've got to bear that in mind as well. It's not always going to be sunshine and roses and winning the rugby. Okay, when we're accountable to each other, there are the difficult conversations, and that's why we do it. So it's not always going to be, well done, my brother, pat on the back. It's going to be, hey, you're actually not doing so well in this area, or how do you think I'm doing? Actually, no, you're not doing so well either. You know, so but that's what we want. We want to be the best version of ourselves. We want to be aiming for Christ. Remember I said 2 weeks ago, shoot for Mercury, and if we land on the moon, we've done well. You know, so we need to be striving to be the best husband, the best employee, the best parent we can be. And that's by holding each other accountable, because we've got these blind spots. So they're called blind spots because you can't see them in yourself. And we've got to be pointing these out to each other and helping each other in our walk. And Deuteronomy 32:30. How could one have chased 1,000 and two have put 10,000 to flight unless their rock had sold them and the Lord had given them up? So that's again sort of back to the horses again. Is just together we can accomplish so much more. So to align ourselves, to align our hearts actually. So it's not just about, I mean, at a place of work you can have aligned vision. Yeah, we must have aligned hearts. We must be seeking God together, seeking His vision, aligning our hearts in terms of where God is taking us, where God is taking the church. And we do that by building friendship and building partnerships with each other. So I'm really excited about the team that went out last week, and look for more opportunities like that. And I think Willem, I said at work, I'm moving into more of a Peter Steph de Toy role. I think Willem's going to be the Peter Steph de Toy of Somerset West eldership team. Because he's going to have a little bit more freedom to be able to move around, because they're a bigger team, he's going to be able to move around wherever God needs him and go and do ministry, etc. And I'm sure he'll be calling on those here that he maybe knows better than Somerset West guys. So let's be ready to be used, whether that's a prophetic event or an outreach. And, you know, don't be overwhelmed by an outreach to Brazil. Just make yourself available, like Lyndon said. Just make yourself available. Trust God for the finances. But you can start small as well. You know, don't be overwhelmed and think, well, I don't have time to take off work for a week or two. Just do an outreach to Swellendam or wherever. You know, so whatever's available, whatever opportunities are available, make yourself available for that and be used by God. Let's close our eyes together.